Whatever it is, I just want to have all of them, just to make sure I'm not... Okay. I think we're holding, do you have marked off where we're holding?
Yes.
Which?
Gilead.
33.
Okay, Lamedalek, right?
Lamedalek, yeah.
Because the last one that I have posted is holding a puff. So obviously.
Yeah, so the last two you missed.
Okay. So. Okay, so now he's. He says over here that the primary Gilead of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person is created with Chisaron. The Chisaron is filled by understanding something profound about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That brings the Kesher HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that profundity is something which deals with Yichud HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of all the things we could possibly understand is Yichud. And this is going to be the point over here. Lamed Aleph. Oma Seichel. If we're going to analyze everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done, promised to do, and created, then the one thing what will come out of this is a sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yichud. V'tiri, shekol shar ma'ala shemusa bilti ba'al tachlis, eina mizbar mechenu klau, shen v'kor pas goyso. So here he's going to say an incredible point, why it is of all the things of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we deal with and talk about, Yichud of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that we are most occupied with. He says there is no positive attribute of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we can in any way fully understand. Speak about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom, well, how is it, how far of that could we understand? We speak of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's strength, how much of that could we understand? We're limited, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is boundless, so we really have no way of making any meaningful statement about it. So he says, Derech Moshel, Yodanu Shu Chacham, Avolo Hisagnu, it's a Chach Moshel. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is wise, but there's no way for us to comprehend, to totally understand his wisdom. Yodanu Shu Yodea, we know he's Yodea, V'lo Hisagnu Yosek. Valkeinam Chazal, so it's very interesting. He has a taich. This is called Tfilas Al Yor. If you daven Nusach Sfarad, you probably say it unthinkingly in the morning when you start davening Pasach Al Yor. It's on Tikkun Zayah. And it basically, Yor says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has all sorts of middos, and he's above all the middos and in all the middos. That's the flavor of Tfilas Al Yor. It's very famous, Pasach Al Yor. So he said, one of the things we said is, Antu Chokim, you are wise. V'loi b'chachma yediyah. But you're not known in your wisdom. In other words, we don't have any insight or comprehension in that wisdom. Antu mevin yuabina v'leib bina yidia. It's a little bit different, I think, than the normal taich of those words, but that's how Ramchal taiches. V'kivon she'enon yichon lahasig amaylus ha'elu, and being that we can't understand it, nimshach lanu mize isach hakir mehem. Kal koyoytze b'ze nemar, that this is a yesod that whenever Chazal in Chagiga, they told us that a person is not allowed to think, inquire about the things that are above, beyond, and so on and so on. The reason for it is so a very simple reading of it seems to imply that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has little secrets in his mishpacha that he would like to keep away from us. So he tells us, don't fry in the closet over there. The real pshat is those are areas that are not given to hakira. The mind doesn't
get it and won't get it. So therefore, the world, that world is closed to Chakira. Chakira is a tool, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a broad area to tackle with Chakira. Those areas that are not meant to be understood, and therefore are incomprehensible, be'etzem, that is something which is not going to be comprehended. I'll give you a mashal. Let's say you have a kid who's just learning to do arithmetic, and he tries to divide a number by zero. And he keeps trying, well, a 5 over 0, what if I do 4 times 0? What if I do 8 times 0? What if I do 9 times 0? And we tell him, no. We tell him the calculation of something divided by 0 is not allowed in division. There is no calculation like that. It's like when your computer flashes something about an illegal operation, what it means is not you did something wrong with American law. It means in the system that's there, that operation that you've tried to do, it doesn't work. The seichel does not understand in yanim v'alokus. So trying to use seichel to understand it is simply a useless function. It's like eating soup with a fork. It's just not the tool for it.
It comes out that our Kodesh, it seems to come out at this point, that Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us this faculty of Chakira, which seems to be very important to
who
we are as Adam. But then the whole point of everything that he did was that we should have some sort of connection to him, and that faculty of Chakira doesn't work in that area for which...
Well, the right way of putting it would be, imagine when you have these plugs for a computer, you know, with 36 little prongs or whatever it is. Each prong has a receptor, and you got to put the right size prong, right size receptor. There are things that are given for Chakira. There are things that are given for experiencing them. There are things that are given for Mesiras Nefesh, to do blindly. The relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, each prong needs its receptor. And having one without the other is not going to work.
Yeah, but at the same time, shouldn't where we'd be at this point is to say that everything that Kodesh Baruch Hu created was the Gala Kvayda. So
correct.
The point of Chakira must be
correct. So when Chakira is used in the right way, so it's Megala Kvayda Shemayim. Just like the right way to use beef is to eat it in the Sudas Mitzvah and to have prayer and so on, and the right way to use Chazer is to stay away from it. And to say you can't do it. Why, you have the views for beef? I see you're smiling.
One of us.
Okay, you eat beef a lot.
Maybe we should see. He likes Sudas Mitzvah a lot.
Okay, it's to have Sudas Mitzvah, do a lot of Kira with the Sudas Mitzvah. Okay. but the question, understanding Chakira, understanding where the tool of Chakira is supposed to use is all about it. Example. In the Gan Eden, our first location, there was a mitzvah to eat of all the trees in Gan Eden. The purpose of each and every fruit was to eat. The purpose of Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra was to allow us to use restraint and not to eat from it. There's a famous quote from Chatzkel Levenstein. He says, "It says by Paraduma that Zeis Chukas HaTorah Lefi She'umas Ha'olam Meinin Es Yisrael." Because the goyim tease Klal Yisrael, they mock Klal Yisrael, and they say ma tam yesh, but it doesn't make any sense. It's therefore it says choyku ein lecha rishus lahar achrav. So there's something strange there about the. You're telling me the Torah needed to say this because goyim make a lot of fun about this mitzvah, and therefore the Torah needed to tell you that what, that you're not allowed to think about the mitzvah. Well, that's not addressing the goyim. So either tell me, paraduma, also to think about, period, and that's it. Or give me an answer for the goyim. But what's this? The kashya you're asking about the goyim making fun of us is not at all addressed by this answer. And so he said that seichel was given as a tool to be for the avodas that need seichel. In those areas that were not given for seichel to be used, the human mind is klutz. It's a block of wood. And then he had, it's a block of wood with what chutzpah are you thinking? Something like that. That was the... In other words, the mind doesn't fit that piece. So that prong is not... the receptor of chakira does not work for these inyanim. It's just like... Let's give another example. There are areas like art. There are areas like math where very strongly constructed logical arguments and postulates and theorems is the way to go. And if you tell me one place that such and such a triangle can only have one side bigger than the other if the angle is this and this, it has to work in everywhere, every place is that. In art, if I tell you red and black contrast well, and then you come into a painting where it's kind of not going well, and you say, this is ugly. You say, no, but you told me about that contrast. It's a chayk v'liyaver. It doesn't work like that. It uses a very different part of the person's abilities. And you can't approach art with the same type of koach ha-chakira that you can approach other things.
So what is the positive response to hope? It is Shol Ke'inyan. The Umos Olam are saying, we know that there needs to be some human faculty that addresses experiences, or addresses religious practice. And this makes no sense.
Okay, so makes no sense means seichel is not the part that satisfies, but doing it, let's give a simple example. There are sometimes, you know, we have phenomena that don't make any sense, but they're metzias. In other words, paraduma makes a person nobler, more tahar, more spiritual. Some things, seichel is a good tool for grasping why. So gneva, staka, these things, seichel is the tool that will give you the information. Paraduma, it's experience. It says Moshe Rabbeinu knew the tam of paraduma. It's not the pshat that he happened to know, and if anybody else would have overheard Akash Baruch speak to Moshe, he would have got it also. Moshe had other faculties besides seichel that he could inherit with. He could feel kedusha. We would like to believe some people are sensitive to kedusha and they can feel kedusha, and some people are not sensitive to it. So for the person who's sensitive to kedusha and he says something here I don't like, and there's no way to explain the seichel, why not? What exactly is the problem? As opposed to somebody who is, you know, very very sensitive seichel, sometimes you can look up shabaruch and come up with what it says in shabaruch. Why it's wrong. Sometimes it's just a sense of it that's not the right thing to do. Those are all, those are all things that are understood with some other factors.
So yeah. When it's saying that it's a chok, is it saying that it only exceeds our ability of chakir, or it's saying it also exceeds our other capacities? Moshe Rabbeinu was unique that he was even able to chapen in another...
No, but it's possible. In other words, it's possible for a human being to be tof his chok, but not through chakir.
So Moshe was not the only one that could be Tofes the Torah.
Right.
Other person could be not. Right.
Let me give you simple examples. Examples that we use every day. The reasoning process includes a reasoning process, which we say makes a lot of sense to us. Our seichel resonates well with it. But all reasoning processes start with axioms. And, for instance, that two parallel lines never meet. There's no way to prove it. But we have an instinctive sense that it's right. And even though, yes, there are other types of universes, but on this universe, that's the way it is. And we feel an instinct, and those postulates are those things that we know, but we know it in a very different way. A postulate, not simply we assume it to be true. That there are pink bears in Florida is not, or in Africa, it's not a postulate. Even though having no way to prove it does not make a postulate. A postulate is something which my gut feeling is that it's a real truth. I don't have any kalim to prove it. that the simplest description of a physical phenomena is the true description, is a postulate. Can I give a reason for it? No. But science always works that when I can describe a phenomena with 85 different mahalchim working together, or one formula, the one formula will be right. Is there a reason for it? That's the start of reasoning. That's how reasoning starts. If I show you I can describe the movement of the planets with 95,000 different circles and it works, and I'll show you with one yisod, we will all say the one is right. So those basic, how do I know that? So there's different faculties. It's not reasoning. It's a certain intuition about what are muskovishos.
And yeah. A response to Musolam is there. Once a person has bought into the idea of a borei olam,
correct,
and that there's a Torah, they have to also be open to certain parts of Torah practice that are beyond, that are experienced in ways other than.
Well, it's not that we need to answer the goyim as per the goyim. The goyim are not easy students, and we don't particularly care to address
them. We've actually
found
that the goyim are the easiest.
Yes, but that's
actually they think they're Jewish.
It's for us. You know, it's this question. It's like when your enemy asks a question that you need to answer for yourself.
So we need to the part of us that's
right.
Resonating with the Goyim needs to step
right
back and
appropriate.
And
so we're Bali Seichel. So when someone answers a question that what we're doing doesn't make sense, that's a real challenge for us. It's the Sutton comes along and his the Sutton's tool mostly is it doesn't make sense. He it's not right. That was the first encounter with Adam. He said, it's simply the facts. You got the facts wrong. Here, we'll do a little experiment. Push against Eitz Hadas, does well. So we need to answer for ourselves. So we understand it by putting Paradum in the category of things that Chakira is not the tool for understanding it.
Related to this, a little bit zaitig, I was recently at the home of a Hasidish guy, and he told me that there's apparently a lot of fall off in the Hasidish world, a lot of people who are at-risk Hasidim. And he said he believes that a lot of this has to do with an ethic or a concept within the Hasidish world that comes, apparently, in his words, from the Baal Shem Tov, that a person should be a fool, they should be a tippish, and they should believe. That's the way they teach sort of hashkaf in the Hasidic world. And
right.
He felt that, like, as people go out into the world, that becomes very dysfunctional for them. Lechora, our Mesorah is not like that. But and at the same time, I wouldn't disagree with them. I have no reason to say that the Baal Shem Tov didn't say that. And yet I also know that Baal Shem Tov was a very smart person, and he wasn't a fool when he believed. So what is the place of that? It seems to be like a very dangerous hashkafa. And I could see how it would be destructive. I could also see, I could hear that the Baal Shem Tov, especially the like simple people in Europe, would have said that. What is the place of that mahalo when it comes to Amuna?
The truth was, we need to go back a little bit earlier than today. The first movement that not only put people at risk but drove away most of us was the Haskalah, where people were trying to quote unquote understand themselves, and they read a novel from Shlomo Aleichem, and it started them on the long road out of Yiddishkeit. In other words, every movement, no matter whatever your madgish, whatever mahalach your madgish, there's always going to be a risk factor. So Hasidus saved in many ways Klal Yisrael in the early period of the last 100 years, the 1800s, and it's running into some problems in modern world. The feeling was that since let's give a marshal for it. Today, where you have the internet with so much information, everybody can become an instant mumcha. So if the question is how to treat a cut, that's fine, look it up there. Let's say somebody has a real medical issue, and he crams his information from what's on the internet. He goes with his doctor, and he overrides his doctor by the stuff that he saw on the internet. That person is likely making a big mistake, because, you know, there's an issue of being a mumcha, there's an issue of understanding what you're talking about, and not a very, very smart thing to do. So you say to yourself, you know, this is, or a lawyer. Let's say a person has a case, so he knows somewhat, but the lawyer has a much bigger, better grasp on it, sometimes not, but most of the time, he understands what will fly, what won't fly, what the judges will normally decide, how it sounds to the outsider, not how convinced the person is. So it's always a question of how much are you safer when you tell people just the Rebbe, and how much are you endangering them in many ways, A, by trusting a person who's not trustworthy, or by reducing all of Yiddishkeit to some sort of a who are you hanging? or reducing all of Yiddishkeit to some sort of game of, father, and so on and so forth. I think in Chassidim there are many reasons why. I think there are two other reasons that I can think of now that have that are important. One is that the tolerance for flexibility is negligible. In other words, in our circle, if a person wears a striped shirt, says not so yeshivish, more yeshivish, nobody has thrown you out of the world as that. By Chassidim, if you curl your pears in the opposite direction, then you automatically treifium. The line is very, very tightly drawn. So that means, and then it's a cycle. That, you know, if somebody eats, my son Michal used to work in Satmar. He used to sell a lot of Nesregim. Michal is a very astute student of human nature. So he said, there are the outcasts, they're called Tuna bagels. So he explained to me, because it has been, some bagels have been considered to be gross and kind of modern and nashing, you know, like not right. So they're taught not to eat tuna bagels. So those who eat bagels, they're the outcasts already. When it comes to shidduch, it's sort of, okay, he's a tuna bagel guy. He's in those days, be a beeper guy. So then it's very, and then once you're outside one step, you say to yourself, what the heck? You know, that's one reason. The second reason is, the men don't have an activity equivalent to sitting and learning with the enjoyment that we have. In other words, you can't just build a movement with what's usher. Dveikus and davening is Shabbos morning, maybe, a tish. But learning for many people is the activity that sort of learning. He has to go to kashis and a chiddush. He makes the roots. It's something which energizes. It fills up your day. I used to walk by, when I used to teach Eish HaTorah, I used to walk there. So I used to walk by the Armenian place,
seminary.
And I used to always look at the galochim. I was always curious about things. I never made it in. But I used to look at them and ask myself, what are they learning all day long? Like what do you do? So I actually had a chance once. We had somebody in Eish HaTorah who had been, had finished seminary for some Protestant, he might have even been an actual reverend. He told me that, you know, you take a lot of courses, counseling, archaeology, biblical history. There's not really. So in the old days, the Chassidim were very into, you know, learning is by rote. Doesn't take much time. Doesn't give you the energy and the enjoyment and so on. So the way they build it is by strengthening the fortress. Strong fortresses are not great defenses. You know, we believe an offense is a much better defense. Having a kumvase, kach, and energy, and so on and so forth.
Why was it so effective for so long? And why was that perspective of like be a fool, be a tippet. Why was that successful against the
Because a person has in himself, a person has a chelik of himself that at the end of the day, if we're to ask ourselves, what is our attachment to who we are? You know, the mind is not, it's not this. It's this. It's the deep core emotional attachment. Everyone, except for like H.R. Torah's core shita that you can prove everything, is that, and knows at the end of the day, for every argument, there's a counter argument, for every counter argument, there's a counter counter argument, for every counter counter argument, there's a counter argument. Philosophy is never over. You know, it's there's an argument for everything, you can always shift it around. What at the end of the day, it's your attachment, your inner attachment, and focusing on that was very significant. There's a fellow. He's very famous. He's a brilliant man. His name is Halivni.
Sure.
So yes, Halivni Weiss. He came from a Hungarian, from family, learned Chaim Berlin a bit, moved on to JTS, and became a great Talmudic scholar. I think himself was always Orthodox. The same type like Shaul Levy is an Orthodox.
Mechkar.
What?
Mechkar.
Yeah, he was very into Mechkar. And he had, you know, his own shita was that you need to divide up the Talmud between the editing and the Talmud itself. So whatever. And he retired, I don't know, a few years ago, lives in Eretz Yisrael. And he lives in Katman HaYishana, which is, today it's a very American bastion, but it's more like a Hamish, you know, a Hamish Shtiblach. It's kind of got a Hamish flavor to it. He asked him why he chose, why he lives there, and he said, at the end of the day, you have to choose between the people you want to learn with to the people you want to daven with. These are the people I want to daven with. You know, at the end of the day, I want to daven with people that are sincere, that are emes, that are toiv, and that's what I want to be part of. The mind is not always, it's not the firmest attachment. It's a guide to help. It's just like a shidduch. When a person is in the process of doing a shidduch, you use your mind and a chakira to try to figure out this person's personality, how does it match, blah. But on a day-to-day basis, what cements the relationship is not the I was looking at, it's very funny, at somebody close to me who was married to an extraordinary fine woman, really a woman with a lot to learn, that married longer than I have, 45, 50 years, very, very special people. But it was once, he was going through his letters that he wrote home about when he first met her or when he first read. So the milas for his wife, or at that time the proposal were, she's very good in geometry and she plays accordion well. And if you look at it, you just laugh. You know, this person is a person with tremendous personality, tremendous depth, and in life, she's showed tremendous, accomplishment, chachma, and strength, and that. So she's a very extraordinary woman. And you look at the Narishkeit, playing accordion and knowing geometry well, as the Milas, and you laugh. You know, it's Seichel, the truth is important. Ideal is both. For me, one of the reasons that drew me to Rav Hutner so much was his Tishon or Mamarim were a combination of tremendous amkus and also a way to tap into some very deep emotional pockets. Singing, the atmosphere, he was a master at it. The two together are satisfying. Any one alone doesn't usually satisfy you. It just doesn't have holding power.
Because we live in an age that's so scientific, technological, information-driven, we have a very hard time appreciating the value of
the age. I think also because, maybe that exacerbated it, but when you have a piece of wood and attaches something else with one screw, it's not going to hold because the other piece is loose. You need every loose point to be riveted in. The way my attachment to things is because of my understanding of its value and my feeling and the reciprocity. All of those go in when I feel very close to a person. There's the admiration of what the person is. there's an emotional liking for the person, which doesn't translate to anything. There's a reciprocity of the person returning that love or whatever it is. You know, it's not, you can't build Yiddishkeit on one thing. You know, it's like Moshe said, a chair that can't stand on three legs is not going to stand on one leg. You can't, a person has pieces, and those pieces that don't have, so if a person's environment that he likes the learning, but emotionally it's dead for him, it's going to start fraying. So just like something that's attached with one screw, the place that's loose is going to start, you know, it's going to become the lever for undoing the rest of it.
It seems also to me that the ability of really maintaining a fortress, perhaps in the world they lived in Europe, was just much more feasible than the world we live in America. I mean, it's like,
for many reasons, more feasible. First of all, this authority structure was normal in Europe. You did what your father said. Your teacher was God incarnate. It wasn't only your Rebbe Cheder. It was your teacher in school. It was the king. It was the czar. It was the general. It was the, you know, authority. A hierarchy of authority was considered to be Muscovician. It was an obvious. You know, if you offended the czar, you deserve to be put to death. Something that today we don't understand why. You know. But in Europe, that was one. Two, people were not much learned. Society could not survive with everybody doing their own thing. Existence was so frail, people needed to be very, very together. That was the metzias of it. Hashem, you know, every generation has its... and that's why it worked. The Baal HaTanya, people don't know this because Chabad is in charge and they sweep this part of history under the rug. The Baal HaTanya was a giant. His Rebbeim, he had a Rebbe who was sort of older a little bit than him. Not a real Rebbe, but just an older figure named Avram Kaluska. Avram Kaluska and Menachem Viteps made Aliyat HaEretz Yisrael. They left the Baal HaTanya in charge. In charge meaning they expected him to sort of be the older figure. The Baal HaTanya, in their mind, was an introverted tzaddik genius who would not be a terribly phenomenal leader, and he would be a caretaker, custodian for them. That was their sense. The Baal HaTanya developed his own chassidus. And they got more and more suspicious and wary, and they wrote some very nasty letters to him. They were trying to put him to Cheirim, try this. They were very, very nasty. We have it. You have the history of it. If you want to, you can. At one point, when he came out with the Tanya, if you take a look, he has no haskamis from any chashuvim of his generation. He has Reb Zisha and Reb Yudah Kohn. That was it too, I believe. And the reason was that Avram Kaluska wrote to him. He says, "What in the world are you doing?" He says, "That's the exact opposite of what Baal Shem Tov wanted." He says, "You need to preach Emunas Chachamim and only Emunas Chachamim. And that's it. What the Chassidim need to know is that they need to follow the Rebbe blindly. You're giving over the keys to the masses. You're educating them in things that they should never know about."
The thought was that the Tanya gave too many of the ideas of Chassidus to the common philosophy.
It encouraged them.
Doesn't it set up a tremendous contrast between the Beinoni and the Tzaddik? Like, doesn't it create the hierarchy?
It does. But basically, Avodas Hashem for him is to sit and to learn and to study and to think and to think and to think and to be enlightened by his thinking. It's a whole different world. And if you take a look, it's very interesting, if you take a look at the classic Chassidish works, before Pshischa, the classic Chassidish works like the Chayz and all these things, there is nothing in the Sefer that can stand on its own. It's not the Pshat, like sometimes you see a Pshat in a Pasuk. And again, this is more like Pshischa, like a Sfasem, where you feel that the Pshat really has a very powerful, valid shorish in the Pasuk. Even if it's al derech drush, but when you contrast Yosef Yehuda in a way that you know, you get a sense of it, and you say to yourself, he's building on Yosef and Yehuda, on all Mahalach, and he's anchoring it there, and you can relate to it. The classic Chassidish don't go like that. It goes they don't relate to a pshat, because they'll say, you know, how come this is this? They'll say, well, big tzaddikim sometimes have a hug, this and that. That's the rumors of the pasuk. And they'll say a pshat that's certainly not even remotely close to pshat. It's not a deeper insight. And it's just like, if you ask yourself the value of this sefer is, because this is the tzaddik said so. It's the pshat in the pasuk is at best verdal. It's kind of a way to hang onto the words. It's got nothing to do with it. You know, if you take a look at it, it's like you can't pass say pshat in the pasuk. It simply is the Rebbe's say so. This is what the Heiliger Rebbe said. He's a big Oved Hashem. He knows what to do. And he's giving Adrach and Avodas Hashem from his experience and his restored knowledge. He's saying it in the pasuk so that it's easy to remember it.
But Asmach
the Balma. Not almost, not even Asmach the Balma. Yes, Asmach.
More Balma than Asmach.
Right, exactly. More Balma than if you look at Pshista, you know, that already you begin to see a very sharp shot in the pasuk. Chabad goes off up there, you know, kind of sort of Kabbalah. But that's already a different. But the Mahalchim that are Kavua and so on. They're all different. But that was the feeling, and it worked for many people.
So what was the end of the story? Talisker wrote to the Balatina.
He wrote him, and he was furious, and basically. But the people, he told the Balatanya, basically, I have a limit schus on you, that you're out of it, that you're busy, so busy with Avodas Hashem and into your world, you don't begin to understand people, you don't begin to understand society's needs, and so on and so forth.
Meaning society's needs would be a much simpler.
Yeah, would be visions, you know, would be like, you know, nice Hamish Achsidim, everybody doing the Rotzen of the Rebbe, and the Rebbe knows it all, and that's that. That was the.
Even though that already changed in other parts of the cities, also, it seemed like.
This is early done. Well, Pshitzer was later. Pshitzer was not much later, but it was the same period. It was the same period of evolving, you know, Hasidus. They were right at Pshitzer at Charma. They were. Pshitzer was also on the receiving end of a lot of.
So, big fight between the Chozer.
The Chozer. The first step was the Chozer and Yidah Kaddish, who really there was a big blowout, big blowout, and then when Pshitzer took over, there was even a bigger blowout.
But in a sense, perhaps that was the evolution of Chassidus, because this pure Emunah Pshuta couldn't work.
Correct. And everything in between. There are some people that this works better for them, some people this works better for them, some people a mixture of two. I mean, there's no absolute perfection.
And in Lamaisa today, there's no absolute perfection. I mean, like, I guess, you know, if a person just does, Punovich all the way, or does Satmar all the way, or like, ultimately these things are going to be, it seems like a lot of these established structures are frayed and are just not capable of carrying the weight
But Satmar carries tens of thousands of people. You know, it doesn't carry everybody. But Rav Kook once said that there were two people in Klal Yisrael that had their circumstances been reversed, Klal Yisrael would have had two apikorsim less and two gdolim more. He said Bialik was a poetic neshama, and he was born into Litvisha Vayin, and Volozhin was not for him, so he rebelled and became a secular poet. He said Acharaam was a rationalist. He was born in a Chassidish family. Chassidish stuff didn't go for him, so he went off. In other words, for them, this world didn't make it for them.
Was the Balatanya Taka an extrovert in the end, or he was an introvert, but just other people built it up?
He was an introvert, but people were tremendously attracted to him. People felt this is genuine. I mean, he was way above, you know. I can't measure people, but he was above, you know. He was huge. He was huge in every area.
But they were drawn to him. He became the leader because they were.
He became a leader, and yes, he became. I mean, he developed a real following of extremely chashuv people, elite. You know, yes, elite chassidim. It's ironic where Chabad today sees itself as a mass movement, evangelical that type. For five generations, Chabad was a very snobby elite movement. My father remembers in Kovel that there was a handful, there were a dozen Chabad, there was a Chabad shtibl with 10 to 15 people, but one was cheshver the other. They were very learned, they believed in learning, they believed in being rationalists, and You know, this is like a very, very different world.
The Chassidus Shabbat was what? Just the attachment to the Rebbe? Like, what was the...
No, what was the attachment to the Rebbe? It was learning the Chassidus. It was being this Amin Chassidus. The attachment to the Rebbe was very different than the last two generations.
It's like the worship of the past Rebbe, Menachem Mendel, that like that didn't exist in the previous...
It didn't begin to exist in that world. And that world was about the Rebbe's Torah. You know, the Alter Rebbe says over here, you know, to learn the mimer, to sweat through a mimer. That was the.
See, how is it different than the Lifshitzer,
It's different in the sense that it wasn't Musa as much as his Amchus. It used a lot of elements of Kabbalah to construct a world view. You know, it had its flavor and so on, but Tachlis, the Primus of Torah versus Nigla, but it focused on using the mind as a chitimsa to elevate yourself. So the ideal Chabad was, before davening, you sit 2 hours and you learn through a very deep primer. And when you've really gotten into it, and your head's on fire, that's when your heart catches fire. That's basically the problem.
You know, but nowadays you'd say that there's not a intellectual movement anymore?
I certainly would say so. I don't think it pretends to be, and I don't think that's what it is.
Although you see by them, they do try to project... You know, there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of similarities between Chabad and Esh HaTorah in a certain way. Like, the projection of ideas out to the world.
Yes, they try to do that. But I'm saying that Barnett, listen, they did not fast the people sitting and learning for any long time. Right. They fast very much being active, going out and doing,
So what flipped there? What changed there? Was just the Rebbe?
Two Rebbes ago.
But he felt he was extending the Baal Tanya's shita into an authentic direction, or was the departure?
I'm sure everybody felt that he was doing it, you know, the authentic. But someone told me he learned in Chabad when the Rebbe was a sheep, and he said that he once asked him about it. The Rebbe told him today quantity is a lot more important than quality. And he says we need to sacrifice quality for quantity. Which, you know, I could get a point. I could get that, you know, phenomenal quality. It's like, you know, if you have a handful of people, it's going to die no matter how much quality. So that was,
I mean, there's no doubt that there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who have been affected by Chabad today that would not be affected if people
On the other hand, it's a movement that couldn't leave its own leadership. So there's a certain... You're going to become extinct if you have no Siddur, you're going to become extinct if you have no Rebbe. So a movement that could not produce its own leader, there's nobody there of rank. Not talking about, you know, because the Rebbe's prison or anything, just there's nobody there that anybody would feel is it's got chachma, the das, and understand his left.
But you're saying in many ways the way it has become is actually lehetzer from what it was. It came from a nucleus.
Yes, very much so.
Led by a super intellect who was absolutely brilliant, and people were connected in terms of their ability to appreciate his intellectual prowess. Now it's...
It's different now. It's doing mitzvahs is the important thing. It's 180 degrees fixed. Okay, good. And next week will be okay. I think if you're okay.
Yeah, it's a shame. I don't know where the DC covers today, but we'll